Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative of Perinatal Quality Care. I am Melinda Harris, a neonatologist at East Tennessee Children's Hospital, as well as one of the state leaders for the Chronic Lung Disease Project. Today, we have the honor of talking with one of our patient family partners, Archana Wadawan. Archana, or Archie, is an ER doctor here at a local hospital. I personally knew her through meeting her daughter, Arna, who had a stay within our unit at East Tennessee Children's. Welcome to our show today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Archie, I would love for everyone here, I know a little bit about your family, but I would love everyone else here to know a little bit about your family if you want to share some information.
Sure. I have a husband, and we were pregnant and had our first child, Arna. I had premature rupture of membranes at 24 weeks, which was not expected and cannot be explained, which I feel like is a lot of things that happen to people who are pregnant or have kids early. And we had Arna at 26 weeks. She had has chronic lung disease, and much of her problems are a result of her prematurity. She was born intubated shortly after and remained intubated, remained intubated for quite some time. And far into her path is that she ended up having multiple rounds of pneumonia, ended up being transferred to another facility to have her PDA closed after she kind of failed medical management for that and had a failed intubation. So we actually had talked about having the PDA closed after that. And then it gets a little more complicated with her history is that that PDA closure device kind of migrated into her aorta. And we had a big setback in terms of what to do with that there. And at the other facility, she ended up going on bypass surgery to have that device removed, was transferred back to our home hospital, home base. And then ultimately, she's able to go home. Well, she went home on oxygen, and now she is thriving. She just got off of her daytime oxygen. She's in therapies to kind of catch up, which I think would be expected with her prematurity. And she's home, which is really exciting. It's just the three of us at home. So for us, that made things a lot easier because every family's journey with having a child is different and having a child in the NICU is different. But fortunately, I think for us, we didn't have to juggle any other children and taking care of them along with a little one who was in the NICU for a prolonged period of time. So she spent 175 days in the NICU and she's doing great. And we're so appreciative of all the care that she got and everyone who rooted for our family. I think that helped us get through kind of a difficult time.
So I would love to know a little bit more about what it felt like knowing once you were ruptured that you were potentially going to have a premature baby. Were there things during that portion when you were still pregnant and in the birth hospital? Were there parts of that stay or parts of that portion of your story that you think would be helpful to share with other moms or things that helped you? Or vice versa, things that we could have done better to help inform you as you moved into the NICU with Arna?
So a couple different things. Kind of going back to what I was feeling at the time, as I mentioned before, I do have a background in healthcare. And I think sometimes knowing all the bad things that could happen is really stressful in general. But also the fact that I thought of all the bad things that could happen during pregnancy, and I really didn't think that I'd be running into the problem of mentally kind of preparing myself for a premature baby with premature rupture that early, because I didn't have any issues with the pregnancy up until that point. One thing that I think, I don't know if it's standard, but I thought that really helped was having that NICU consultation done as soon as, I think it was done within 12 hours of us being admitted to labor and delivery. I thought that that was very helpful because we had it. Granted, I was on magnesium, which I don't know if a lot of people have been on magnesium before, but it makes you feel very drunk and high. So it was sometimes difficult to listen to what was going on because the medicines, but my husband was there with me too. And I think we had a good discussion, a long discussion on expectations for our child. It's sometimes overwhelming, but it can be overwhelming for parents to hear the statistics because they're not wonderful. I was 24 weeks when we had that discussion, but to kind of have an idea of, okay, if the baby survives the delivery, these are the things that are probably going to happen next. This is what I would recommend. This is kind of the statistic for long-term disabilities. But I thought that kind of having knowledge and going into the delivery with that knowledge and having the NICU team close by, knowing what would happen next, I think that was helpful to try to mentally prepare myself for what's going to happen next. I sat like a mother duck or mother hen, as one of the docs called it, for 2 weeks trying to prepare, or I guess trying to not deliver the baby. And a couple things that I, in retrospect now, kind of find a little humorous, but at the time, not so much with the hormones, anxiety, and stress, was people are not used to having babies that early, and people are not used to having mothers who are sitting in labor and delivery for the purpose of not delivering a baby. And it's just little things. I don't know if they're, I think at some point we wanted to put a sign on the door that just said, not in labor, because we'd have the baby nursery cart get put in the room several times, which is kind of stressful to see after they've taken it out, because that's not what our goal was at the time. And then people coming in, and it's an automatic thing to say, like, what are we having today? And like, I've had some people, staff members say, wow, we're still here, which, I mean, when you're already emotional, it's kind of hard. The other thing that I thought would be useful for, I guess, people, physicians or caretakers who are listening to it is if there is a space to put separate for the mothers who are not trying to deliver babies, that'd be great, because it was really hard emotionally to sit next to in the laboring unit with mothers who are having kids when you're trying to have the opposite of that or try to hold on to not going into labor. To get me through that, it was kind of difficult, but I think keeping your mind busy was the big thing that helped us. Watching, we had episodes of Netflix and whatnot to go through, and books to read, and things to do to try to keep my mind off of things. But it's definitely difficult on the mom and difficult on the family too, because everybody keeps asking you questions like, when's it going to happen? What's next? What do they say about the baby? And I think another thing that was helpful throughout our NICU journey was we ended up appointing, I think, one family member to be the liaison communicator to the rest of the family, because there's a lot of people who want to show their support, but sometimes that can be emotionally draining to tell multiple family members what's good, what's bad that's been going on with the baby. So I thought that was helpful. I'm trying to think of what else really helped us. I think those are the main things kind of to start on.
I think you make a really good point, because really the walking into your room and seeing you there, it should have been, yay, you're still pregnant.
Yes, yes.
So that's great things to remember. I think one of the things that you alluded to is that you have a healthcare background, of course, being an ER physician, but your husband doesn't have a healthcare background. He has lots of experience in other aspects of the world, but not necessarily in healthcare. So when you're in the NICU and you're hearing very complicated things, especially because Arna did go through quite a few complications, how did you think it worked best to communicate with you versus Brian? Did you have any thoughts or tips on how we as neonatal providers could have done maybe a better job balancing that?
Yeah, I think it's always important to know, as providers, to know who you're talking to and get an idea of what their background is and education is. You know, the thing about the NICU that is, I think, special is that, or I guess special just to the specialty itself, is the fact that the parents are so involved or are so present during that time. They're part of the person, you're not just caring for the baby, but you're also caring for the family too, in some respect. For somebody like my husband, who is not in healthcare, one is, you know, never been admitted to the hospital, never been to the hospital and have to really see family members. It's been fortunate for that. But he had no idea what the schedule would be like for rounding, for instance, or, you know, what's an optimal time to get time to talk with the doctor and the care team. And we had experience at two different hospitals, so we had an idea to kind of compare. And what he preferred, or what he really liked about where we were initially admitted, was it's less for the physicians, but there was a standardization on when you get to the NICU, these are the expectations. This is the time the physicians come check on the patients typically. This is how long you're going to be with that physician for that rounding time, because I think the schedule is 2 weeks on with the same day shift doctor. And I think when the other hospital we were at, it was every week they switched providers. And so then you had an idea, who am I with? Who's the doctor? I need to take a look at and talk with them. Where we were at, I think we knew the estimated times in which the doc would be rounding. And I think that was the time that we typically would talk. But our initial visit, whenever we would come in, nursing staff would let the doctors know, and they would come by at some point in time and kind of update us. And if they didn't have an opportunity to do that because it gets busy, the nurses would typically also update us when we came in. So we would come in, they would give us the overnight pertinence and what the tentative plan was. And that was every single time we came in. And sometimes night shift would also leave us notes on the whiteboards in the room. And I thought that having that really standardized, because most of the nurses at that NICU would do that. As soon as you came in, if we hadn't met them, introduce themselves, everything on the whiteboards was updated in regards to goals for the plan, how much intake PO she was having, who is being consulted, or what our goals are for her today. And then we could look at some of the data stuff too. Like I think her morning gases were always on the table up there too. So I could take a peek at that. But I think a lot of times during rounds, everybody would kind of talk and make sure they had our questions answered. And at the other hospital that we were at, we had a little bit less of that because it was such a big unit, but we could page to talk with the doctors. And I mean, he's a scientist. And so we got papers to review over kids with chronic lung disease for him to take a look at and for him to be able to educate himself on what's going on with our daughter. So I thought that everybody seemed very approachable to kind of ask questions. And for him, just having an oversight of this is what the day is going to be like, I think made it less overwhelming for somebody who wasn't in healthcare, had no exposure before.
I think that's really great information. I mean, so much of what we need to do as providers is to take into account who we're talking to and what their background is, and also what type of learning or information sharing works best for them. But I do think that sometimes we also may not do as good of a job at having a routine that families can identify and be able to kind of get behind. Because when you're in the hospital for a long time, that routine is very important, I would think. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about how Arna is doing now and what sorts of things post-NICU that you guys have gone through or gotten to see the success of with how her health has been.
So I think that to touch on her health at home, I'd say first off, when we were being discharged from the NICU, we had to have a stay at night and had home health kind of go over her equipment with us, because it is a little bit daunting to go home with equipment when, you know, sometimes equipment can fail. And that took us some time to navigate when things did fail at home, because sometimes we had a couple instances where her concentrator wasn't working or the regulator on her oxygen tank didn't work and she didn't get oxygen, and she was very, I think, labile with her oxygen. She didn't have a lot of reserve if she were to have any issues with oxygen not getting to her when she first came home. What I think was kind of difficult and I think hard, again, less so much for the physicians to coordinate, more so that there's got to be think a communication or some liaison to help with that outpatient transition, because we knew the medical stuff and we had all of our appointments scheduled after discharge. But the expectation of trying to figure out one, she was on for the state, she was on 10 care before we were discharged. She no longer qualified for aspects of it. And there were other options that we had for assistance for healthcare for her as a secondary. But that application process is clear as mud. And there weren't a lot of contacts that we had to help us navigate that. And it's not really obvious how to do that on some of the websites too. So that's one thing that was kind of hard for us and we still are trying to figure out. We had appointments scheduled and then we got involved, or she qualified for TEIS. And so we have a social worker through that, which that transition went smoothly. And they helped us coordinate a lot of our outpatient therapies for her. And I think that's something that most, I mean, not all, but a lot of NICU babies are going to have some component of that outpatient after discharge. That had was a little bit difficult to navigate because our appointment with our physiatrist was like 4 or 5 months out from discharge. And the reason why we had that was because we didn't want her to be exposed to a doctor's office if we didn't have to, or a doctor's like a physical therapy office if we had to during peak respiratory symptoms, since Arna was discharged in the winter. So we couldn't get the ball moving on a lot of her therapies because we couldn't get, I mean, coordination for a lot of the orders for it. And then on top of that, resources are pretty limited. So you were waiting on some kid who needs to ideally try to catch up by 2 years of age. And we couldn't get therapies established till more than 6 months after discharge. That's something to consider because it's not just a question of getting the consultations in for everything. It's just that the waiting list and the resources within the system do take some time to get coordinated. So it would have been better if we had those consults in upon discharge, because then a lot of this could have been done a little bit. It could have been more streamlined, I think. But she's in, there's a lot of different options for therapies, at least where we live, and we're fortunate for that. So we had home health for occupational therapy for a little bit before we transitioned to outpatient physical therapy, OT, and speech. And one of the companies in the area comes to the house, which is really nice because if we didn't have that, we'd have to go to an office 3 times a week. And I think that that's pretty difficult to coordinate with. I can't imagine having another child with that. So that's something that may not have been obvious, but would be something that I think just communicated while we were in the NICU in that discharge process would have been good to know, because the expectation that you might have to go to a doctor's office 3 times a week for them to catch up with their therapies is kind of it's a lot, and it's a lot to coordinate just within the family. We're fortunate that my husband works from home. Otherwise, I don't think we would have been able to coordinate a lot of this.
I mean, I think those are really great comments to make, and I especially mm-hmm. hope there's practice coordinators and hospital administrators listening, because it is a refrain we hear all the time about how difficult it can be to coordinate the level of care that a former preemie needs once they go home in order to optimize their outcomes. And certainly there's variability in the level that a family is able to commit to that timing and that coordination, depending on what other things are happening in their lives. So I think you make a lot of really great points. And certainly we hear that also from other NICU moms and dads about what it's like trying to go home from the NICU. So that's, I think, a great comment, hopefully, for other people to take and listen and try to fix that problem. mm-hmm. So Archie, you alluded earlier that you had experiences in 2 different NICUs through your stay with Arna. I would love to hear from you about how, having had distinct experiences, how you think that all of us can do a better job of walking with a family on their journey through the NICU.
So we were at, during our hospitalization, 2 different hospitals. And there's different ways in which their schedule is set up. Both hospitals did or multidisciplinary rounds, but sometimes during that, it can be overwhelming for the families. One of the hospitals was a lot larger, so the care teams were really big, and they changed quite often. So there's different faces every day. There's different people assigned to our family every day, and sometimes it wasn't clear who we were supposed to use as our communicator. And I think in order to kind of help families kind of have a better idea of what's going on, communication's really important. And when you have these big care teams, sometimes as families, we feel like nobody, at least we felt personally, that we weren't sure who was the liaison to talk to, and we weren't sure who was the person to give us the information for what's happening with our child. Sometimes they have to go through multiple people. And I mean, this also can happen when there's multiple specialties involved, but we weren't getting a clear picture of what the plan was. And I think what would be helpful when you do have some of these big care teams is to think about having somebody who can loop back, who's consistently involved with the care, communicate with the families, because having different faces and not a clear distinction on who to talk to when we had questions made it really frustrating for us as a family. Especially when we're going through the roller coaster of having a NICU baby who has great days and then has bad days where you're not sure what's going to happen or if there's going to be a tomorrow. And not knowing who I could talk to ask questions, or I had to talk to several people to try to get a hold of somebody, that just is very stressful and very daunting to try to, okay, navigate. I'm going to have to try to get multiple people into my room to get an idea of what's going on with my child. And it can't be during the rounding times because they need to round on everybody. But when is a good time then? And I don't think that was not. Some places it's scheduled, some places it's more casual. They see you come in, give a quick update. But when you have a large hospital system where there's so many patients, I think there needs to be some communication with families on who we can get a hold of to help answer our questions. And we're pretty laid back for the most part, I think. And if we just needed to have somebody to help us. And I think that was one thing that could really help families kind of transition to, or not transition, but just kind of deal with the stress of information overload and seeing a sick baby. That's stressful enough, but also not knowing what's going on with them, not knowing what the plan is, that's also pretty difficult.
So what I hear in those comments is that we can do a better job by just providing consistent line of communication. So knowing who to talk to, having parents be informed on when we're going to be by, be consistent, and way for parents to know how to ask for more support and ask for more clarification. I think that's a great learning from those words, because that is something that I think a lot of families struggle with that are in the NICU, is knowing how to ask questions. So just as we kind of start wrapping things up, how would you encourage a family right now that has a preemie? What do you wish somebody had told you when Arna was in the NICU, or before Arna was in the NICU?
I think that's a really good question. And when I reflect on our experience, I kind of started thinking about what were some points during our family's experience that made me think, or made me kind of have a different perspective on the circumstances that were ongoing. When we were admitted and Arna was born, we had the NICU doctor come talk with us afterwards and kind of tell us what her birth was like, because they had to take her into the resuscitation room afterwards. And he said, this is her life story. And that just kind of stuck with me, because the thing about children, whether or not they're in the NICU or not, is that that's their story. That's their life. And as much as I would have loved her not to have a complicated delivery, it is part of her life story. And to kind of relinquish control over that really helped me, because my goal as a parent and it just made me think, my goal for her at that time is just to support her the best I can and try to encourage her to be the best that she can, no matter what. And that's what you can do. The fun thing, but scary thing about life is you don't always have control over everything. And knowing that I just don't, but I'm going to try my best to support her, I think really helped take away some of that stress, because you go into a pregnancy thinking that I'm going to have this baby. I'm going to make the room look really nice beforehand. I might have a baby moon. We didn't get any of that. I had to think about things of what am I going to do with the things I bought with the baby if we can't bring her home? And the thoughts of those things kind of went away when I said, my focus is to support her and this is her life story. So that was one thing that really changed my perspective. Just something casually said to me that I feel like really helped me kind of mentally navigate through things. And so, and another thing for parents too, is this time passes and this experience, it's hard. And every child's journey is difficult and different, but the stress is still the same on the family. And so there's that being said, someone said, you know, this is going to pass at some point. It's not forever. And that's kind of what I just kept thinking the whole time.
Gosh, I love that. I love the thought. And I think that that advice is pertinent in not just the NICU, but everywhere. Yeah. Right? Don't have control over the things that happen to your children or within your own life at times. And so the best you can do is know that these difficult times hopefully will pass. So thank you so much, Archie, for all of the information you've shared and the story you've shared about how you and Brian and Arna, what your journey was like through the NICU. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Yes, thank you for having me and getting me involved. And hopefully this conversation provides some food for thought.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby, Tennessee.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby, Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby, Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.